Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast. So Allie Hazelwood is the number one New York Times bestselling author of Love Theoretically and The Love Hypothesis, as well as a writer of peer-reviewed articles about brain science, in which no one makes out and the ever after is not always happy. Originally from Italy, she lived in Germany and Japan before moving to the US to pursue a PhD in neuroscience. When Allie is not at work, she can be found running, eating cake pops, or watching sci-fi movies with her three feline overlords and her slightly less feline husband. We are chatting about her newest book, Bride, which comes out on February 6th. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, welcome, Allie Hazelwood.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me today on this episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast. So we are here to talk about Bride, your fifth published book. Can you tell our listeners what Bride is about?
Yes. So Bride is my first paranormal romance, and it's the story of a vampire woman who ends up being stuck in a marriage of convenience with a werewolf. They are, you know, in this alternative universe, the two species are at war, and this marriage, the idea is that the marriage is going to kind of patch things between the two species. And can you hear my cat meowing? Like,
no, I can't.
She's outside of, like, and she is literally meowing like I have never given her love once in her life. And I don't get it.
That's okay. My dog does the exact same thing. It's only when I'm recording or like on camera, he's making more noise than he's ever made in his life.
It's like, how dare you think about things that are not me for even a second. Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's what Bride is about, really. Mostly, yeah. A marriage of convenience story.
And so, yes, this is your first foray in publishing into the paranormal romance sort of sphere. Where did you first come up with the idea for this sort of paranormal story?
So, I really, really wanted to write a fated mates book, something that, you know, would have this idea that two people are just meant to be together, that there are kind of like genetic or, you know, magic or, you know, destiny related reasons for which they have to be together. And you know, it's a trope that you can't really, I guess you can have the fated mates tropes in a contemporary book, but I don't know that it works as well. And so I think that's how it started. I wanted to write something like that.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point that the fated mates sort of seems to have more impact when it's like more magical or like out of our hands, maybe.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so what did the writing process look like for you for this book? Because I know that you do have a pretty intense publishing cadence. I mean, we've got like 1 to 2 books a year. So how long did it take for you to write this book and what was that like?
So I wrote it, you know, usually it takes me about 6 months to write a book from the moment where, you know, I start drafting it to the moment where like I actually turned into my editor and, you know, I feel like I have fixed it enough but that I can show other people show the book to other people. So yeah, usually like 6 months. It changes a little bit, but it feels like my publishing schedule is incredibly hectic and that I have a lot of stuff going on. But the truth is that I had a lot of books pre-written when I started publishing, and a lot of those kind of ended up coming out, you know, like twice a year. So it feels like it's a lot, but I am not really a very fast writer, in truth.
But that's interesting to know, just sort of right, like where you are in sort of your publishing journey and then sort of the differences, obviously, if you had books already written and now that you've had several come out already, like just what that process is like a few years into being a published author.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually, I didn't know this before publishing or before I was in publishing, but there is a lot of time that goes between the moment where you turn in a book and the moment where the book comes out. And it's actually something that has been a little bit weird for me because the books that I am very excited about usually are books that I just finished or that I am writing in that moment. And then they don't come out until, you know, 1.5 years later. And you're like, I'm like, I don't even care. I don't even remember anymore what I wrote. I'm like writing something else. My taste has changed. So it's a little bit weird sometimes. But yeah, I remember I was super excited about announcing Bride when last year in the summer I was on tour to promote Love Theoretically, which was my last adult book that came out. And I really, really wanted to announce it. And my team was like, no, we're going to announce it later. It's not the time yet. And all I wanted to do was talk about that book. And now I'm like, well, Bride was a year ago, so I don't think anymore.
No, but that's so true. But certainly in publishing, like where we talk about this, like this book has not yet come out. It is a week or so, a little more than a week away from actually coming out. And right, like you wrote this eons ago, like you're already onto the next or even the next thing. And so, yeah, publishing is such an odd process where who knows where we're at in the timeline.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's not what I expected when I started, I think, or when I was outside of it, I just thought, you know, an author would turn in a book and it would come out a month later.
Right. Exactly.
It looks like in movies, they usually like in movies, you have them like turn in the book to the editor and then literally 2 weeks later, it's in bookstores.
Exactly. And so there's not that long wait, but right. Like you wrote this a very long time ago and we're just now going to have it in readers' hands in a couple of weeks' time. Mm-hmm. Now, you are known for writing really intelligent and sort of witty heroines. Misery has, Misery, our main character here, has bite to her in more than one way. And so I'm interested to know how you approached writing the character of Misery Lark.
Right. So I think I really wanted to write someone who has had the kind of past that sort of made her get to the point where she doesn't really care very much about anything. You know, I think if you take a character and you put them in a situation where they literally have no way of, like, here's the deal. So Misery is in a situation where either she is going to be super badass because, you know, she is among her enemies. So either she's going to be incredibly strong and she's going to have the upper hand, or she is going to be absolutely terrified. And I just don't know that I didn't really want to write either character. Like, I didn't want her to be the most competent, most amazing, most brave person. And I just didn't want her to be like very meek and scared and terrified and just like kind of, you know, hiding in a room. And so I just kind of decided to write someone who's a little bit in the middle. So she has a past where she was the collateral for the vampires in human territory for many years. So basically she was there to ensure that if there was a war, the humans had her present in their territory and they would have killed her immediately. So she was a deterrent that would make it so that the vampire wouldn't start a war with the humans. And that means that, you know, she has grown up among people who absolutely hate her. She is, she has been the victim of, you know, many assassination attempts. And she sort of has graduated to the point where she just doesn't care about it. Like, she's like, you know what? I think I am just gonna go ahead and do and live my life. But there is this one person that she cares about, who's her best friend Serena, and she is kind of like the driving force for her. But aside from that, she's neither super badass nor super scared. And it was kind of fun to write this character who is, you know, trying, like, has a lot of feelings on the one hand about where she is, but on the other, she's not excessively I don't know, confrontational or scared. I just kind of want her to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. And I think that you did a wonderful job at that, because she definitely has growth where certain things happen throughout the course of the book. But then also you can tell that there are moments where, right, she just is used to being in these types of situations that are nerve-wracking or dangerous. And her sort of snark comes out a little bit, which I found really, really entertaining to read some of her sort of snippy comments or some of her internal monologue there as she sort of progresses through the story.
Yeah, I think it kind of comes from not caring too much about whether you live or not. And it's easier to like see things with humor if you're like, well, if I die, I die, I guess. And, you know, she doesn't have a lot to lose at the beginning of the book. Because of her past, because she just doesn't have very many relationships. I think she's kind of surviving. That's why it's fun to have a character like that, because she's not going to be, you know, terrified. She's going to be like, well, I guess I'll die. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's a really good point, because as like the collateral, she was collateral for many, many years growing up. I think she must be used to just sort of being in like pause. She wasn't there to do anything of her own accord or like pursue school or do anything like that. She was literally just there to be collateral. And so after that's over, what does she want to do? And we learn a little bit about what that is. We won't spoil it yet, but she's a really interesting character. And so in contrast to Misery, we have Lo Moreland, who is our alpha werewolf. So I'm interested to know if you had like three words you would use to describe Lo. Maybe other than alpha.
I would say he is selfless. He is protective, and he is, it's not a word, but bad at technology, maybe.
Yes, which is, I thought, a really fun contrast, where Misery has lots of technological skills and computer skills, sort of in contrast with his inability to Google.
Yeah, I really like the idea of him being a little bit of like an artist, like more like his soul is the soul of an artist and she is more of a like hard science girl. And I like the idea of them being kind of complementary in this, in the sense that, you know, he can use her skills and she can use his. So that was fun, right? I feel like I've never written an artistic main character, and I would like to at some point.
So Lo is very dreamy. He has seemingly lots of interests and talents, and it was really fun to learn more and more about what those are as the story sort of goes along, because he's quite mysterious when we're getting a lot of the things from Misery's perspective. Without giving anything away, we did mention fated mates already as the trope and sort of the inspiration for this story. Are there any other tropes that readers can look forward to in Bride?
You know, I really wanted to write kind of like a fish out of water story, but not too much. I think I actually had a conversation with my editor, because my editor really wanted to use the enemies to lovers trope as like for publicity, for marketing or whatever it is that they use it for. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying, I wouldn't say that this is necessarily an enemies to lovers book, because they are on different sides of a war. So, I mean, yes, they are quintessentially enemies, but they are both kind of, I would argue, they are people who are not excessively proud of being their species, and that they are not so entrenched in specific ideologies where they're like, oh, well, all vampires are terrible, all werewolves are terrible. I kind of liked the idea of them being a little bit standing out a little bit from, especially compared to the people around them, because of their past, because Misery grew up with another species and because Lo grew up not in the US, so in a place where the different species are a little bit more integrated. So I would say it's a little bit of a different take on enemies to lovers. I definitely wanted to have kind of like, you know, Lo is a little bit of a caregiver. I wouldn't say it's the single dad trope, but he takes care of his younger sister. And I knew I wanted like a child in the book. I think I thought that would be fun to write, and it would be fun to have a character like Misery, who is not someone who's gonna like baby talk to children. She's not someone who's gonna have any patience for children. She's gonna treat a child like they are an adult, because that's what happened to her. People would treat her like an adult when she was a child. They would put her at risk, and she almost got killed. So she's just gonna do the same. But, you know, even though she really does not want to bond with this child, with Lo's little sister, she does. Like, she just, it's beyond her ability to do that. So that was something that I really wanted in the story.
And I think that, yeah, absolutely. Those are some of the tropes that I think readers are going to be ecstatic to see some of these elements in this story.
I hope so.
And now Misery does agree to marry sort of her mortal enemy, you know, sight unseen at the start of the story. And that's sort of where everything else unfolds. We find out a little bit behind, we find out more about the motivations about why Misery would agree to this and why Lo would agree to this. And so I'm interested to know how it was for you sort of crafting the mystery element to this story. So, you know, what was that like to incorporate those threads throughout the story that's, you know, primarily got the romance at the forefront, and then you have their other motivations behind the scenes?
Yeah, it was, honestly, there was a lot of like back and forth for me. So I remember writing the first draft and then being like, I'm gonna have to rewrite this in a way that actually makes sense, because, you know, it's kind of hard. I had an idea of what I wanted. So there are a lot of things that are not supposed to be twists. Like, I think, you know, I would be surprised if people are not able to guess who the bad people are from the beginning. And then there's like, you know, a specific twist that I knew I wanted from the beginning, and that sets up other things. That was, you know, a little bit harder to kind of wave in and make sure that, you know, there would be kind of like some groundwork for that, but also that it would come as a surprise. I am not a mystery writer, a thriller writer. I read them a lot and I love them, but like, I literally have no idea how to do that. So I hope it worked, and I hope it works for people, but definitely there was a lot of like trial and error and going back and like, you know, having these weird mental maps where I was like, okay, so people think this and other people think that. And then you have three species, and then within the species, there are different factions. And then you're like, oh, what do I do? And I also have to admit, I am not a big, like, I read STEM fantasy, but like, it's very hard for me to keep up with complex world building. So I really wanted to keep the world building to a minimum, just so that it could really like just be the background of the love story. So there was that to think about too. It's one of those things where like you write it and in your head it makes sense, but then you're like, will people like it? Will it resonate to them? I don't know. No, we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, no, but I think that that's a really interesting perspective to know, just in how you were writing it, that there are certain things that are not meant to be like huge twists, mm-hmm. because, you know, the primary point of the story is the romance between Misery and Lo.
Yeah, yeah.
That's making me, I'm like, oh, okay. I also think for this, I wanted to ask you about the world building, because obviously werewolves and vampires and all of those things, we've seen them in many different adaptations, and we've seen different interpretations of what that even means. And so I was interested in how you decided to sort of take more of a like biological approach to the werewolves and the vampires. And it's interesting to hear that you did just want it to sort of complement the circumstances of the story and not be too like we're building a huge and intricate world.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where I was at. And I think it's because when I think about my favorite paranormal romance novels, I mean, actually, I would argue that people like Nalini Singh or Cressley Cole, they definitely have like these sprawling words. But like at the same time, you can tell that those are romance novels, that the most important thing is, okay, you have this thing in the backdrop, which is, you know, usually different species and different, you know, sometimes magic creature, sometimes there is no magic system, it really depends. And then like, in the backdrop, like when that's the backdrop, then you're going to have a lot of opportunities to bring people together in like original and in original ways, or in ways that you wouldn't be able to, like conflicts that you wouldn't be able to have if it was a contemporary romance. So that was really fun for me. I think if you write magic and, you know, the paranormal in your world, you have to create one that is very consistent. Otherwise, people are like, oh, you're just making up stuff. And I think that's why I just decided to go with something that was as simply biological as possible. And then once I had that idea, it was kind of, you know, you can just make your decision and everything goes. So one of the things that I did was, you know, looking at stuff that is possible in, you know, the animal kingdom. So there are, you know, there are species that have mostly purple blood and species that have more green blood. And so I can just, you know, apply that to one of the species if I want to. So it was kind of fun because I could just do whatever I wanted. It was different from what I usually do, where I have to like research a lot and be like, okay, well, I'm writing a book about chess. So what is feasible and possible in the real world about chess? But I can make up that vampires have, you know, pointy ears. No one can forbid me from doing it. So that was really fun in a way.
Yeah, no, and I actually really, really enjoyed those elements of the story, just sort of learning what choices, you know, existed in this sort of realm, like what it meant to be a vampire, what color their blood was, what their features were, whether they would like explode in the sunlight or not. And I thought that was one of the most fun parts of the book, was discovering sort of all of those decisions and like the mythology of this world that you created. And
I'm glad.
I enjoyed that it was also very contemporary. Like, we're Googling, we're using coding, we're doing all of these things. But right there is sort of that, like, again, little bit of paranormal fantastical element where they have more strength or thralling, if I'm remembering correctly.
I think I was halfway through, or I was writing, and there was a point when I was like, I feel like the vampires don't have enough cool stuff going on. Give them something new.
I really enjoyed that sort of fun, like just again learning what that mythology was in the world of Bride. I thought it was a lot of fun.
I don't really like read reviews, so all the feedback I get is like, you know, this. So it's nice to know that one person liked
it. No, I thought it was so much fun. just to be sort of immersed in this world, right, where we're learning how everything works mm-hmm. and what everything means. Now, I'm interested to know what you think. Again, this is a little bit of a hard question without spoiling the entire plot of the book. But what do you think Lo and Misery's biggest obstacle is when we meet them in Bride?
Well, yeah, and like you say, it's hard to say this without spoiling, but I think, I guess this could be a little bit of a spoiler, but mostly, and it's something that they talk about, they really have like different hardwares, like, you know, fated mates is a trope that is part of the book, but not every species has the concept of fated mates. And, you know, like in that book, the idea of fated mates is not something necessarily magical, is more of something that is biological. And what happens if you don't have, if one of the two people has the biological hardware to know, okay, you are the person that I'm meant to be with, and I will never not love anyone else, and the other person just doesn't have that, like, how do you deal with this imbalance? And that was something that like was very, very fun for me to play with, like the idea that you can have you know, a meaningful relationship, even if you know, not, it's not going to be the same for both people, because the process of falling in love is going to be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think what you said is giving them that choice to make it work or not, within that trope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is going to be a little bit of a spoiler. So I don't know.
Listeners, a little bit of a spoiler.
One of the things that I really, really wanted to write, and I don't know what that says about me, but I really love the idea of someone who identifies the other person as their fated mate, but instead of going all possessive, I cannot live my life without you. They're like, well, I love you so much and you're so important to me that I want you to be able, like you said, to make that choice. And I really, really wanted to write something like that, just because I don't know. It's the selflessness of it all that just feels so, you know, I like mafia romance in which, you know, guys chain women to their radiators as much as anyone else. But sometimes you really want kind of like, you know, the feeling of someone who's just like such a good guy, you know?
Yeah. Right. Well, and right. Giving everyone in the relationship the freedom to make those choices, even with some of these added elements sort of in play. I really loved that part of the story as well. This may be because I, as a reader, am not the most versed in paranormal romance or in sort of the Omegaverse or anything like that. So there were a few elements to the story that surprised me and that I had to do some Googling on. Is there anything that readers should research or go into this knowing, or should we just dive right in?
You know, I mean, if you want to Google Omegaverse, I don't know if this is an actual Omegaverse book. Like, Omegaverse comes with a specific set of like rules, but it definitely has Omegaverse elements, especially in the way the sex happens. What would I say? You could read The Fake Mate by Lana Ferguson, which is a book that came out recently, my same publisher. It's a really fun, really like, it's an amazing story and an amazing book. It's tonally, it's like kind of a fun rom-com, but it has some Omegaverse stuff. And that might be, you know, I think you would enjoy it first of all, but like that might be good research, I guess.
Yeah.
But also just generally, I would say that if you have been on AO3 or fanfiction.net, if you have been in those spaces, you probably know what I'm talking about. If not, I think you can skip the sex scenes. I mean, if the idea upsets you, you can probably skip the sex scenes. And I don't know. It's something that like that biological part is definitely something that was a big part of fan fiction culture when I was coming up in fan fiction and learning to write. And it was definitely something that I was like, I want to bring this into traditional publishing with me. I don't want to say goodbye to that. And that was so fun to actually be able to write it and to have my editor not say, that's it, you're fired.
Yeah. No. So I think listeners and readers, you can absolutely just read this without any background knowledge, but you can certainly do additional research if you were intrigued to know more, like I was.
And I'm sure, like, again, I'm not on Goodreads, but I am 100% sure that someone on Goodreads will be like, this is what it is.
We'll help.
So if you, right. That might be a
will help outline. Yeah. Absolutely. No, and don't skip the sex scenes because they were great.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, taking a total pivot, in the story, siblings and found family are very important to both of our main characters, Misery and Lo. And so I wanted to know why it was important for you to explore those themes of, you know, sibling relationships and dynamics and found family in the book.
Yeah, I just really, I feel like when you give a character something or someone that they really care about, that's when, I don't know, for me, that's when I really start loving a character. It's when people would say Save the Cat. There is this book that is called Save the Cat Writes a Book. And basically the idea is that it's a book about craft that tells you how to write a story. And the idea is that you have to have, the character has to save the cat. And by that, what I mean is that even if the character is very, very unlikable, they have to do something that shows that they are deep down people who are not necessarily good, but like relatable. And for me, the most relatable thing in a character is caring, you know, and the fact that Misery cares so much about her friend that she's literally the only reason she makes life decisions. Like the one thing that has been, you know, a constant through her life, and she will do whatever it takes to find this person. And, you know, Lo as well, he has given up, he had a life elsewhere, and he has given up that life because of what the needs of his sister were. And I think for me, that was, first of all, a way to make the characters likable and relatable, but also like a way to make them relate to each other, because they have this thing in common where they just love these two people in their world. And, you know, as the book goes on, you find out that these two people are even more connected than you would think. And so, you know, I like the idea of exploring that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I loved seeing the contrast, like Misery has a brother, you know, and Lo has a sister, but those aren't right. The differing ways that siblings can sort of play a role in your life. And again, what importance you place on the people that you're related to versus those found family.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't say like her brother, he was actually a late addition. Like she didn't have a brother originally. Like it was, I think I was about a third through the book, and I was like, you know what, I think she needs to have a brother. Yeah. I think her brother is actually her twin, and it was really interesting in terms of adding an element of, you know, resentment, but also like what her life could have been, because her brother is her twin and he could have been chosen to be the collateral but wasn't. So there is an element of Misery being like, you know what, screw that. Like it could have been anyone else, but it was me and I'm mad about it. And it was very fun to also write kind of that thing. And it's something that permeates their relationship. There is a little bit of resentment on her part, and on his part, there is, you find out as the story goes on, that there is a little bit more than just, I don't care about you and I don't know you because you grew up in another place. There is a little more.
I really enjoyed Owen and his interactions. And so speaking of, he's obviously a part of the story. We see him off and on. We see other characters, Lo's sister, Anna, and Alex, who's a member of the Wolf Pack. I'm wondering if you had a favorite character sort of outside of our two main characters in this story.
It was really fun to write Quinn. He is, he's the best friend, like the kind of best friend, kind of father figure, kind of, you know, he's another alpha for a neighboring pack, which is also the pack where Lo grew up, because it was because of reasons that you find out in the book. And he's kind of like this horrible person in a way. Like, he's just very brash, and he just says without everything that he thinks of without a filter. It was really fun to write him. And then, I mean, I guess Anna is a little sister. She is, it was just fun to write her because she is, I think she really makes the character of Misery come alive. She's, again, she's this person that Misery does not want to care for, but ends up caring for. And she's like, damn it, I hate it.
Yeah.
and yeah, it was really fun to write her.
That's interesting that you said that. And I will cut this if we're not allowed to talk about it or if I'm not allowed to ask. But this book shows some potential that we may see other characters in this world in other books.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're asking. So the truth is, I don't know if we will. Like, I hope we will. But, you know, with publishing, it depends a lot on whether the book will do well and whether people want a sequel. So I think, yeah, depending on that, we'll see. But I would love to. And I have, you know, a story in my head. And I also, one of the characters especially is a character who I think needs some happiness and needs, you know, to have kind of their story told and to have kind of like, it's just a character who has not had a good experience within the book. So I would love to write better, happier things for them.
Yeah. Well, I would love to see that. So that is just one person's vote.
I will tell my papa.
Thank you. And so I know that we are very excited about Bride. It comes out on February 6th. I do love to ask this though, because we have talked about publishing, the schedule is all over the place. Is there anything that you're working on currently that you're allowed to talk about?
I'm writing a book right now. Again, I'm writing another book. And that would be my next book is going to be Not in Love, and it's going to be out in June, and that's been announced and it's done. But the book I'm writing right now is, I don't know that I can talk about it and say mm-hmm. what it is. It's another one of the situations where it hasn't been accepted yet. Mm-hmm. Because I haven't even turned it in because I'm late, but it's one of the situation where, I feel like it could be a thing where my editor is like, no, it doesn't really work, and it ends up not coming out, and then I have to, you know, self-publish it 2 years down the line. Mm-hmm. So it's that's why I'm a little hesitant mm-hmm. with talking about it. But it's a little bit of a different book for me. It still has like a little bit of a STEM aspect, but it's not the primary aspect. The characters are a little bit younger, but it's an adult book. So yeah, I feel like that's what I can say for now.
Well, that's absolutely okay. And I do love, so obviously you had your young adult mm-hmm. book come out last fall, Check and Mate, and now you have your paranormal romance Bride coming out in February. And I love to see that you're doing, you know, different genres or different like mm-hmm. audiences and just sort of exploring, because the writing and the characters are fantastic no matter the setting. So
thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think it's because coming from fan fiction, I feel like I don't know. Fan fiction is very whatever goes. And, you know, if you have an idea for a story, you just start writing it and you post it online. And, you know, that's kind of how I am seeing publishing as well. Like, I'm just kind of going by what I want to write at a specific moment. Maybe I get bored easily. I don't even know, but yeah.
For Bride, I'm wondering if there's anything that you're most looking forward to when the book comes out and sort of for book tour.
Yeah, I'm actually not really going on a book tour, but I will be doing my launch, my virtual launch with a Barnes & Noble thing. And I'm actually very excited about it because it's going to be with CEO Axelrod, who has a book out, which is women with bad reputation. It's out that day, and it's fantastic. It's like kind of a rock star romance about like a drummer and a bus driver. It's fantastic. And then also with Nisha J. Tully, who has she has multiple books coming out, but like she has a fantasy romance. I believe she's self publishing it that month. Coming out, and so I'm really excited about just hanging out with them, and then the following day I think I have another virtual event with Lynn Liao Butler, who also has a book coming out the following day. She's a thriller writer, so I'm excited about that. I'm not gonna be touring in person because I am very late with my other books that I should be writing.
Yeah, well, too much going on.
Too slow.
I did just see my invitation in my email to the Barnes & Noble virtual event since I am subscribed to those. So it was funny right before this. I was like, ooh, yes.
I literally, every time I talk about, like, I just saying it to you, I just remember that they asked me to post about it on Instagram and I completely forgot.
Speaking of which, is there a place that our readers and listeners can find you where you're most active and post for updates and things like that?
Yeah, definitely Instagram. I have a website, alihazelwood.com, that I want to say update with some frequency that is unspecified. And then I sometimes am on TikTok, depending on whether there is, you know, something that I'm interested in looking at. We could be, you know, salt burn stuff or whatever, or succession memes. And if I am there, I will sometimes post videos, but I will go months and months forgetting to post. So really, for updates, I would say Instagram is my most reliable place. Okay.
Wonderful. And now, as we sort of wrap up, is there anything that you would want readers to take away from Bride in this story with Misery and Low?
You know, really just a couple of hours of, you know, having fun, or just if you have a problem, if you have some issues, if you're feeling down, just a couple of hours where you're not focusing on that and kind of get the opportunity to be happy, or even like be angry, even if you hate the book, if it distracts you from something bad that is going on in your life, I will consider my job done. So
no, that's perfect. And I think that this book absolutely fits the bill. I was like kicking my feet a little bit at certain parts of this book.
I'm so glad.
Oh, well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me about Bride. It's been such a delight getting to know you a little bit more and hearing about this book.
Thank you so much. It's been so fun.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode on overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Emma Dwyer and Joe Skelly, and presented by Overdrive. To learn more, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.